Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 299 of the Roguecast, recorded July 28th, 2020. Only Teens.
It is something of a weird week. We got comics a little bit late, which hopefully will be mostly invisible to our customers as always.
Yep.
But it means we will have to scramble a little on Wednesday morning. It also means that we had kind of a lighter than usual Tuesday.
Yes.
And also, Dave is out. And as a result, Nick and I decided to do a throwback to old weekly podcasting. Even though there's really not any comics to talk of just yet. There's stuff coming out tomorrow, like Pulp, the new Brubaker and Phillips thing is tomorrow. And there's definitely other stuff.
I was going to say, there's a bunch of X books, there's Empire books.
And we'll talk about all that next week on the podcast.
Yes.
Probably you and me, because I think it's still you and me on podcast.
That's true.
And that this week in DC, there really was like, there was Suicide Squad, which we're all really enjoying.
Yeah, surprisingly, it is that and the deceased books are the only DC books that I really enjoy right now.
You're with me on the Tom Taylor train.
Yeah, and then there was that teaser for his Marvel thing that I was making the rounds, and then there's now he's just teased something for DC, possibly going back to his...
Injustice. Yep, Tom Taylor should be given everything to write, and I'm sure that would be great. He also has that new Boom book, Seven Secrets.
Which I've read...
The first two of those?
I've read the first one. Yeah. I haven't read the second one.
It's good.
I really liked the first one.
And when Nick says he's read it, what he means is we got a preview copy.
We did.
It's not out yet, but it's coming soon.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple we've gotten preview copies lately. Thank you, Boom, and I guess Vault.
Vault, Image.
I'm excited for... Of all things, Vampire the Masquerade comics.
Yeah, those are good.
I've read all the three that Vault was nice enough to give us, and I know nothing about that world, but the comic was a lot of fun.
It's Tim Seeley, right?
It's Tim Seeley and I think Tina Howard? Or Teeny Howard?
Teeny Howard. I believe... only T's here at Rose Gallery.
Yes, only T's.
Yes.
So yes, the world of comics continues to roll on, and just really some good stuff out.
We're also big fans of the fabulous Thunderbirds. We all enjoy wearing t-shirts.
Yes.
And
We
all brandish tomahawks. We wash our clothes with Tide. Everything we do, tease.
I don't like it.
Alright, it's Tuesday, Nick.
It is Tuesday.
Alright, we got some story news. Just want to quick mention some games we got in this week. The game pipeline has opened back up again. And also... One of the downsides of post-COVID has been a lot of distributors branching out. We suddenly went from having like one comic distributor and a primary game distributor and a secondary game distributor to three comic distributors and book distributors and like five game distributors.
Yeah.
And while, again, that is hopefully fairly invisible to the U.S. customer, it means a lot more work on our end.
Yeah.
The upside of this, the silver lining, is that it has led me to seek out games that have been out of print for a long time and look, say, like, maybe I can just order directly to the manufacturer. And so, as of today, we've got back in stock the game Root, which we've been out of since, oh man, it's probably a year.
Yeah.
So Root had they have an RPG coming later this year, which we kickstarted at the retail level. We'll have that. They had something for free RPG Day, was last weekend.
If you're lucky enough to get one of those went fast.
But before it was an RPG, it was a board game. And we just got the board game and its main expansion back in, along with their side game, Vast, which is like sort of a dungeon crawler.
Yep.
This is a really pretty... it's anthropomorphic animals in a fantasy kingdom, and it's like a war game. So you choose a faction that has different special abilities. You sort of put your little cat meeples and raccoon meeples on the board to track your territory, and then you try to take territory, and each faction has different win conditions. It's really fun war game. It reminds me a little bit of what I liked about Scythe.
Yeah.
But it also, like, honestly, I would be shocked if Dave doesn't wind up picking this up just for the animal meeples, because there's cute little chibi cats and raccoons
style of the game is just beautiful.
Yeah, it's very pretty. It's a really good game, and I'm really glad to have that back in stock.
Yeah.
We also stocked back up on the Mondo game, Unmatched.
Yeah, it's a collaboration between Mondo and Restoration Games, which puts out a bunch of like older games that have been long out of print. They kind of redesign and repackage. This is sort of a PvP, very quick game. I think average games last about 20 minutes.
Yep.
And it's taking things like We have one in front of us called Jurassic Park, which is Muldoon versus a pack of Velociraptors.
Yep.
There are also, there's a four-pack of...
King Arthur, Medusa, Alice in Wonderland, yes.
And then another four-pack that has Dracula, Sherlock Holmes, Jekyll and Hyde, and the Invisible Man.
That's Cobble and Fogg. Great name.
All of this has art by Mondo, so the art is gorgeous.
There's cards in each one, right?
Each character has their own deck, essentially, which has their moves in it. Like,
okay.
I was looking at, like, life dials, because you basically have to knock your life dial down to zero.
Okay.
And I was, in the Cobble and Fogg one, which I picked up, I was looking at the dial for Sherlock Holmes, and he's got, like, 17 or 18 life points. And I thought, that's really high, when compared to Dracula... only has 13, and I was like, oh, but Dracula's cards, he's got cards that he drains life from people to regain life, and okay. I'm like, okay, so he actually is tougher. So, I mean, they have unique card decks, and they're really, really cool.
They come with minis.
They come with minis, so yeah, you get a pack of three Velociraptors. It's called Engine, but it's just Muldoon.
He has Engine Worker tiles, though.
He does have Engine Worker tiles, yeah. They each come with, like, a secondary character, like Holmes comes with Watson, Dracula comes with the three sisters, or the three brides.
Yeah, nice.
So, yeah, it's really a cool concept, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to play.
Yeah, and then we got all those back in stock, although I think the King Arthur is already gone, so the one we have left is, like, the last one.
Until they
reprint, yeah. So yeah. But yeah, this is cool. We haven't had a chance to play it yet. We've been wanting to do that. Another free RPG Day thing that came in, Kids on Brooms.
Yep.
This is the sort of an offshoot from the Kids on Bikes thing that they do. It's that system. But this is basically, it's Harry Potter and what's the other one? The Magicians?
The Magicians, yeah.
So if you're going to play Harry Potter, The Magicians, that's what Kids on Brooms is. People have been anticipating that. We got Warlock Tiles, which is WizKids' new, like, 3D, fully painted terrain.
Yeah, this is really neat terrain. There's various sets of it.
This dungeon starter that's City.
And then there's the Inns and Village that's the other starter. And then there's, like, a bunch of other just kind of subtiles. And there's, like, summoning circles that actually light up because they're LED.
Those are cool little light up summoning circles. And then there's a box of dungeon dressing. There's a box of, like, you know, doors and stairs and that kind of stuff. It's pretty impressive looking terrain.
Yeah, it really is.
And Steel Prime aren't using a ton of minis right now, but who knows? They might be quarantining with a gaming
group. I was going to say, if you're D&D with your family, this is not a bad thing to have.
Yeah, it's really, really nice terrain. We got Scooby-Doo Betrayal at Mystery Mansion, which is the Betrayal on House of Hill. Betrayal at House on the Hill? Betrayal at House
of Hill? Betrayal, yeah.
Betrayal at the House on the Hill? I don't remember.
I don't know.
At Haunted Mansion. I don't know. It's the Betrayal games, but it is Scooby-Doo flavored.
Yes.
Which is pretty awesome. It's a standalone game, and it's not an expansion. And then finally, they finally got us the D&D Mythic Odysseys of Theros, which is the new sort of... It's based on the magic set, which is also based on, like, Greek mythology.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
So they have... one of the mechanics is that your hero, in addition to having, like, a background and a class... You have, like, a heroic destiny that gives you some kind of magical abilities.
Oh, that's cool.
It's pretty cool.
And we have both the regular cover and the variant cover of it.
Very pretty variant.
And the variant is gorgeous.
Yeah.
As with all of these D&D alt covers that we get exclusive, they're just drop-dead gorgeous.
Right. So, we don't have a ton of news or anything right now. We obviously don't have comics. But we thought one of the things we want to talk about was the Emmy nominations, which came out today. Nick and I are both big TV heads.
Yes.
And so we thought we'd sort of run down... Now, I have a famously fractious relationship with the Emmys, in that I always feel like they give credit to things that don't deserve it, and they miss things that they shouldn't have.
Right.
And I think, in general, this year, they did better.
Yeah, you'll kind of run us down a little bit. I don't have it in front of me, but yeah, I actually thought they did a good job this year.
So I will say, I'm going to go first to the things I think they missed.
Okay.
I honestly think Star Trek Discovery is Emmy worthy, and I'm surprised it didn't get any nods. I feel like they need a genre category.
Yeah.
I don't know how, I guess Barry was last year, right?
Is that definitely? Yeah, Barry was, I don't think it counts.
Okay. The things I think they're missing, did Shrill get any nominations last year?
Ooh, I'm not sure.
Shrill deserve a nod. Modern Love deserved a nod.
That's true.
The Politician deserved a nod.
That's... I don't know about that.
And Sex Education deserved a nod. I think all of those are shows that could have... that could easily have been best dramas.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that that's a shame. Especially Modern Love in particular, I thought was pretty spectacular. And Shrill did something we have not seen on TV.
Yeah.
And I think that that's... it's a shame that...
I think of the ones we mentioned... I mean, Modern Love, yes. I think Shrill is a huge miss for them.
You didn't like The Politician, though?
I didn't. I couldn't get into it.
I didn't The Politician not being Emmy-nominated, to be honest. I love it, but I don't necessarily see it as Emmy-worthy. But I feel like they missed that. And I think Sex Education should have been in the comedies.
Yeah.
But, so their drama series nods are Better Call Saul, The Crown, The Handmaid's Tale, Killing Eve, The Mandalorian, Ozark, Stranger Things, and Succession. There's a lot of darkness in there. That's yes. A lot of dark dramas. I will say... I'm surprised The Mandalorian made the cut.
I am too. It's for it being kind of the genre thing, it is a weird one to throw in there, but I'm happy it made it in. It kind of deserves... I think it deserves to be in there. I think Favreau did a great job with it.
It was one of the best things on television, for sure. Yeah. If you had to pick, what do you think is going to win?
Ugh.
Here's the thing. I hate Succession. I hated Succession.
See, I watched the first season. I actually really liked it, but I like all the people in it.
Yeah, I like all the cast. I just hated the show.
If I had to pick out of this...
And I think Ozark is boring. And I think Killing Eve had a great first season and then just fell off. Handmaid's Tale is too dark for me to watch. The Crown I don't love. Like, of these, the ones I would want to win are Better Call Saul or The Mandalorian.
I think the fan in me wants The Mandalorian. I also... do watch The Crown and Handmaid's Tale and like both of them. I feel like The Crown will probably...
I bet it goes to The Crown or maybe The Handmaid's Tale.
I think the dark horse is Succession. I think people love that show.
Yep.
Brian Cox does an amazing job.
I agree. That's why I want to mention I hated it, so that when they pick it, I can talk about how much I hate the Emmys.
Yep.
Comedy series, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Dead to Me, The Good Place, Insecure, The Kaminsky Method, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Schitt's Creek, and What We Do in the Shadows. So What We Do in the Shadows and The Good Place are both phenomenal comedies to me.
If I know they probably won't win, but those are the two that should
The Good Place, nothing else should come close. The Good Place should absolutely win this.
Just for the finale alone, it made me cry.
That should win. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is really, really good, and its latest season was really good.
Dead to Me, I think, is okay.
I think Dead to Me does not belong in here. I was not super, but it's also, it's not much of a comedy.
Yeah. I am not watching Insecure, though I have heard mixed reviews.
Insecure's great. I think as it goes on, it gets a little weaker, but early on, it's great.
Issa Rae is great. Mm-hmm. So, Schitt's Creek, this is their kind of nod to, because it's their final season.
I'm finally starting to watch this, and I don't love it yet, but it's funny.
Yeah.
Catherine O'Hara's amazing.
Yeah, she's... But the thing is, she always is,
no matter what she's doing. The Kaminsky Method is weird. I think this is probably a Golden Globes type thing. It's like, usually they like the Hollywood Foreign Press likes...
Remind me, Kaminsky Method is Michael Douglas, who's the other person in it?
It's not... Oh, man. It's not the guy that I'm thinking of, the cranky old man guy.
Right? Oh, it's Alan Arkin.
It's Alan Arkin, yeah.
Okay. I need to watch this. I love both of those people, and some of the subcast I'm looking at, it's got Lisa Edelstein and Nancy Travis, Jane Seymour.
I watched an episode and thought that was okay.
Okay, I mean...
But in no way is it worthy of all the talent that's on it.
Yeah.
Your pick in this one? I mean, we both think the Good Place should win.
Yeah, that is... My dark horse is What We Do in the Shadows. That show can do no wrong. Yeah. It is amazing, and if you're not watching
it,
go watch the movie. The TV show doesn't really have a lot of connection to the movie, but it's so, so good.
I'm honestly at the point where I like the show better than the movie.
Yeah,
and I
am
love
too.
The movie.
Yeah.
But the show, especially season two, so good.
Yep.
Limited series. Little Fires Everywhere, Mrs. America, Unbelievable, Unorthodox, and Watchmen. Of these, I think we didn't know Unorthodox.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that one.
But Unbelievable, you watch, and that was just too dark for me. Subject.
It is dark. It is very, very good.
Mrs. America, I watched and really loved. I wasn't sure I was going to like, but the cast is amazing, and it's look at sort of the attempt to publish the Equal Rights Amendment.
Yeah.
And sort of 70s feminism running up against 80s conservatism, and It's a really good show with a really, really good cast. Well,
Unorthodox sounds harrowing and dark as hell. Yeah, so it's
that's
about
what
it's
like this year.
A woman flees an arranged marriage in Brooklyn to start a new life abroad. Then her past catches up to her. So
okay. Little Fires Everywhere was a novel adapted to.
I watched like the first couple of episodes.
Very grim.
Yeah, but it has Kerry Washington and is it Reese Witherspoon? Yeah,
and they're both great in it.
Yeah,
I watched the whole thing through. It reminded me a little bit of the HBO one that
Big Little Lies.
Big Little Lies.
Yeah.
In that it's like it's undeniably good and award worthy, and yet I didn't love it.
So I probably feel like Watchmen is for me going to take this.
Watchmen should. There's no way Watchmen should have been as good as it is.
Yeah.
Like it is. It is on par with what the graphic novel does. It tells a new story. It echoes the original. It is. It's about race relations. It's about something. It's so good.
I think in our current climate, I think Watchmen takes it. And I also, but I think the secondary contender for me is Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I think that one is pretty great at what it was, even with this dark subject matter.
So now we get into lead actor in a drama series, lead actress in a drama series. And something I think interesting here, there's a lot of shows where the show isn't nominated, but the actors are.
Yes.
And that tells me that the show is not that good.
Yeah.
It's basically like, oh, you're wasting your talent. there's one in particular. So lead actor in a drama series, Jason Bateman for Ozark, Sterling K. Brown for This Is Us, Steve Carell for The Morning Show, Brian Cox for Succession, and Jeremy Strong for Succession, and Billy Porter for Pose.
What is Pose?
It is about trans.
Okay.
I've never seen it. I've heard it's good. Billy Porter is supposed to be excellent in it.
Yeah.
I watched the first four or five Morning Show. Steve Carell is good in it, but I don't like The Morning Show. I did not like that show.
Yeah, I finished watching it. I think I was star for entertainment, and my wife loves Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. So it was good for what it was. I didn't think it was amazing.
Yeah.
But Steve Carell's track record for picking things is kind of shaky.
He did not get nominated for Space Force, let me say that.
He did not.
I think...
I don't have a love here.
I don't either. I would bet this is going to go to Brian Cox. Because he has been doing, he's doing the patriarch role.
Yeah.
Brian Cox has not gotten a lot of love from the Emmys, but he is a beloved theater actor and movie actor.
And I think the Dark Horse candidate is Jason Bateman. I think
you're right.
People love Ozark for some weird reason. I tried watching it, and I lasted 30 minutes into the first episode, and I was like, this is so dark.
I watched the entire first season, and I watched part of the second, and I like it. It's like, it is good. But it's so slow that it makes, Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad look like breakneck TV. It's really weird, and I'm not into it.
Yeah.
Lead actress in a drama series, Jennifer Aniston for The Morning Show, Olivia Colman for The Crown, Jodie Comer for Killing Eve, Laura Linney for Ozark, Sandra Oh for Killing Eve, and Zendaya for Euphoria. Cool to see Zendaya not nominated. I heard Euphoria she did great work in.
Yeah.
That was another one that the subject matter was so dark I could not get past the first episode.
Yeah.
I have friends who love it. Killing Eve, Sandra Oh is great on Killing Eve.
Yes. But she's great in pretty much everything she does.
Yeah.
Jodie Comer, I assume, plays the assassin that she's enamored with.
Yeah.
Olivia Colman. Olivia Colman is amazing.
Great.
She's got an energy about her that sort of defies everything, no matter what she's in.
Yep.
So I can always see her as a contender.
Yep.
Jennifer Aniston's in there because she's Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
She played herself, essentially.
It's the same reason Steve Carell is in lead actor.
Yeah.
It's like, we put a big famous beloved TV person.
And I love Laura Linney. Again, it was art, super dark. I couldn't get into it, but she's amazing.
I'm going to guess this goes to Sandra Oh. She is overdue an Emmy because she never got even a nod for Grey's Anatomy, I don't think. Or did she?
Oh, did she not? I thought she did.
Maybe she did.
I think it'll probably go to Olivia Colman.
Interesting. Okay. Lead actor in a comedy series, Anthony Anderson for Blackish, Don Cheadle for Black Monday, Ted Danson for The Good Place, Michael Douglas for Kominsky Method, Eugene Levy for Schitt's Creek, and Rami Youssef for Rami.
I've not watched Rami.
I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I got a few episodes in, not my thing.
I think if this doesn't go to Ted Danson, there's something wrong with
this
world.
That's correct. We are in the bad place if Ted Danson does not win that award. And he probably will.
I wouldn't be sad to see, Anthony Anderson or Don Cheadle.
Sure. But
they're great.
Neither of them are doing their best work on those shows.
No.
That's, I think, the thing, is that Ted Danson was, like, at the top of his game on The Good Place.
Yeah, Ted Danson came and just brought it with every episode.
Lead actress in the comedy series, Christina Applegate for Dead to Me, Linda Cardellini for Dead to Me. That's why Dead to Me is on the thing, because of those two actresses.
Yes.
Rachel Brosnahan for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Catherine O'Hara for Schitt's Creek, Issa Rae for Insecure, and Tracy Ellis Ross for Black-ish. This is a good... Any one of these people deserves this award.
Yeah.
Honestly, my nod would go to Rachel Brosnahan, who plays Mrs. Maisel,
because
she's great. That's who I hope wins. I bet Catherine O'Hara takes it.
Yeah. If she hasn't already. I don't pay a ton of attention
either.
To the Emmy,
I
don't know if Catherine O'Hara has won. I feel like Rachel Brosnahan has won for Mrs. Maisel.
She might have.
Yeah, I mean, I would also... I love Tracy Ellis Ross, too. So
we're not going to go through everything, because there's tons of categories. I guess I really want to just kind of mention as we go through, Jeremy Irons got nominated for Watchmen.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Saw that Andre Brower got nominated for Supporting Actor for Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is
great.
always great.
Yep. I'm glad Jeffrey Wright got a nod for Westworld. Also, apparently Bradley Whitford was in Handmaid's Tale. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he showed up in the last season. He was kind of a character... in the horrible place in Gilead, and he was actually trying to help, smuggle people out.
Oh, man. Supporting actress in a drama series is tough. Is there a category? Laura Dern, Meryl Streep, Helena Bonham Carter, Samira Wiley, Thandie Newton. That is rough. That is a tough category to be in. That everybody there is great.
Oh, man.
I didn't know Samira Wiley was in The Handmaid's Tale, by the way. I love Samira Wiley.
Yeah. The Handmaid's Tale is great. It's just
so dark, and especially now.
Yeah.
Hard to watch. Darcy Carden got nominated for Good Place, and that's great.
That's amazing.
Alex Borstein also got nominated for Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, where she's great there, too.
Oh, Jean Smart got nominated for Watchmen.
Oh, nice. Yeah, she was great in Watchmen.
She was.
Interesting, Hollywood got some nominations for Supporting Actor. Hollywood was not a good show.
Oh, that was the...
That was another Ryan Murphy show.
I saw Tracy Ullman. Apparently she was in Mrs. America.
She played Betty Friedan. She was great. And Margot Martindale played Billy Abzug. And Uzo Aduba played Shirley Chisholm.
All of them
was
got nominated.
The first African-American woman to run for president.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we looked at the reality competition, which is super fun. The Masked Singer, which I've never watched. RuPaul's Drag Race. The Voice. And then the two that we love. Top Chef and Nailed It.
Yep.
Honestly, I love Top Chef, but I think Nailed It should get it.
Yes. What is her name? She is just amazing.
Oh, God, I can't remember her name either.
Nicole Byer.
Nicole Byer, yeah.
Yeah, I could pretty much watch her in anything.
Nick, you noted that with one exception, the Variety Talk series is basically the end of the Jon Stewart Daily Show explosion. It's like
yes.
Trevor Noah on The Daily Show, Samantha Bee on Full Frontal, John Oliver's Last Week Tonight, and Stephen Colbert's Late Show.
Yeah.
And then Jimmy Kimmel's in there as well.
Yep, just kind of a weird thing.
Honestly, that should go to John Oliver. John Oliver is doing... I mean, not that Trevor Noah is not doing great stuff, and Samantha Bee, and Stephen Colbert, but John Oliver's show is something else.
Yeah, John Oliver is... I watch that every week when it is on.
Oh, that's interesting. And the animated series...
Oh, I didn't see that.
So, Simpsons is on there for Thanksgiving Horror... Rick and Morty is on there. BoJack Horseman is on there. Bob's Burgers is on there. Big Mouth, which I've never watched.
I've watched a little bit of Big Mouth. It's funny. Usually, I mean, I'm just going to be a Rick and Morty head and just say that deserves it. It consistently makes me laugh.
That BoJack Horseman episode is the one where she sort of confronts suicide, and it's harrowing, but it's great.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never watched BoJack Horseman.
BoJack is a darker show, but it's a great show. I would definitely
okay.
Watch to it. All right, so that is, and there's tons more Emmys. There's casting Emmys, there's choreography, there's cinematography, whatever. But that's the basic rundown. I gotta say, that's not too bad. They missed some stuff. I feel like there's some people in it. I really don't like Succession, but it's not too bad.
You don't like a show about rich white people fighting amongst themselves?
I do not.
This is why you also probably don't like Billions.
No, but I loved the first season of Billions.
I'm watching that, and I honestly think it's just the cast. Billions is somehow Giamatti versus Damian Lewis.
I should not be rooting for the tech billionaire.
No.
Or but Damian Lewis plays him so well, and his wife is played by Melan Ackerman.
Yeah.
And they're so good.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know why I like it as much as I do, but I like it.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about some TV and movies we've been watching. Okay, so one of the reasons that we're podcasting this week, and we usually have been doing the 2 weeks thing, is also that Nick and I have been dying to talk about a couple things that showed up on Netflix and Hulu.
Yeah.
Some original movies. I don't know if these were originally going to go to theaters, or if they were all... No, I guess...
No, they were both.
It
was always Netflix and, I think, Hulu. I don't know about Palm Springs, but...
So let's talk about... First, let's talk about the comic book-related one directly, and that is Old Guard.
Right.
This is Greg Rucka and Leandro Fernandez for Image. It is about immortal soldiers... Sort of. They're soldiers from, like, they've been around since, like, the Turkish era. Like, they're
from various eras.
Various eras. And now it's a modern day, like, military mercenary unit.
Yep. There's only five of them, or four of them.
At the start, yeah.
There have been others that, and they just die whenever they're supposed to die, essentially.
Yeah, basically, it's not that they're immortal, it's that they can get shot, and they die and get back up, and sometimes they don't. They don't know when their time is going to come.
So I think there's a few things that I want to talk about that makes sort of this unique.
Yeah.
Greg Rucka did write the screenplay, so it is essentially him writing an adaptation of his own comic, so it is pretty darn close.
It is. It is wild to watch the behind-the-scenes thing.
Yeah.
And see Charlize Theron talking about... She's like, yeah, I love Greg Rucka. And I'm like, oh, man. How much does Greg Rucka love his life right now?
And then the director of this is Gina Prince Bythewood.
Yeah, first black woman to direct an action adventure.
She was known for Love and Basketball.
Oh, yeah.
And I forget what was her other movie that she was... She's done a few things, but that was Love and Basketball was the one I knew right off the top. It's nice to have a woman of color do an action movie.
Yep.
That is fantastic at the action.
Oh,
she has a unique look at how action works.
The fight scene between Charlize Theron and Niall.
Yeah.
On the
plane.
On the plane.
Yes.
So good. So yeah, I loved this comic.
Yep.
And they really brought it to life effectively. And Charlize Theron is great here.
Yep.
And then all the other actors, like, I thought their cast overall was really good.
Yeah, Kiki Lane, who...
She plays Niall, right?
I believe that is what it
is. Niall is, like, the new soldier. She's in Afghanistan. She gets killed by an insurgent. She wakes up, and she basically gets... When you wake up and you're one of these immortals, you dream of the other people, and they dream of you, and they kind of find each other. And so they sort of bring her in, and she's reluctant to be a part of this private military unit, and then she winds up kind of getting dragged into it.
Right. She was in If Beale Street Could Talk.
Okay, yeah.
She is a badass in this.
Yeah.
But the rest of the cast is really good, too. Chetawal Ejiofor plays sort of a villain-ish kind of character.
He's like their contact who's hiring them for jobs, and he's been hired by this scummy pharmaceutical guy who basically wants to use the immortals to create immortality.
Yes. Their villain, if you can, the kind of evil tech giant guy.
Yeah.
Scum of the Earth, really played well by Harry Melling.
Yep.
But the rest of her crew, Charlize Theron's crew, I thought was fantastic.
Yep.
I love how they address just a gay relationship.
Yep.
That they don't really, it's just there. It's
yeah.
just an accepted thing.
Yep.
I thought that was fantastic.
Also, I gotta say, I'm surprised Rucka usually has lesbian relationships. It's one of the early gay male ones I've seen him write.
Yeah, and basically how they express their love, like, in that one scene where he kind of tells why he loves this person.
Yeah.
I was like, that was a fantastic speech.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that they got the axe that she uses, the custom axe. That was great. They do this, they show the scene where she, like, just goes and just takes an entire unit by herself. They pumped up Niles' role in the in the comics. She's just kind of the POV character,
right.
And it is definitely Andy is Charlize Theron's character.
Yep,
it is her story. It is definitely she's the lead. Niall is much more the co-lead of this, and I think that was a really good decision.
I agree, but I'll watch anything she does,
and she clearly loves doing geeky stuff. She's made some bad movies as a result.
Oh yeah, of course.
She was in Aeon Flux.
Yes.
Like, but Then she made, like, Atomic Blonde was great.
But I think if some actors or actresses had done that and mm-hmm. did Aeon Flux and saw the reviews and, like, I'll never do another genre thing
right,
again,
they would
just write it off. Charlize doesn't give a shit.
She clearly loves doing genre stuff.
Yeah.
And loves doing, like, comics and sci-fi and that kind of stuff.
And obviously she's... I heard she did a lot of her own stunts.
Yeah.
And she brings it.
Yeah.
Her action sequences are fantastic. Apparently they're going to do two more of these.
Yep. Yeah.
I say bring it.
Rucka's writing as a trilogy. The second miniseries is over, and I'm sure we'll get traded up pretty soon.
Yeah, Force Multiplied.
Yeah, we're out of the trade right now, but we should have it back in, I think, Thursday or Friday.
Well, then they do lay the seeds for the sequel throughout the movie, and then there's sort of a teaser at the mid-credits, I think.
Yeah.
So,
this was really good.
It was. I honestly think it is maybe the best movie that Netflix has produced in a while.
Yep.
I mean, they do good stuff. I mean, Netflix has kind of like a...
I don't know, their movie track record is not great.
But, I mean, they have a basic template for their movies that they follow.
Yeah.
And this one felt like it went outside of that template a bit.
Yeah.
And for the better. I think it actually was really, really good. People should check this out.
I agree. And then the other one, this is on Hulu, is Palm Springs.
Yep.
And this is Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti.
Yep.
And J.K. Simmons. I didn't know what I was getting into. I thought this was a romantic comedy.
I, too, did not read anything about this.
So you're watching it, and Andy Samberg's at this wedding with his girlfriend, who seems kind of terrible, and he's dressed in a Hawaiian shirt, and he's carrying his own beers around, and he looks like this big, disrespectful jackass.
Yep.
And then Kristen Milioti plays the sister of the bride, and she seems a little bit lost, too. And then he gets up and gives this beautiful speech instead of her, and rescues her. And so the two of them sort of wind up making out on the beach. And I'm like, oh, this is... And then he finds that his girlfriend was cheating on him. And it's like, oh, okay, this is going to be a cute romantic comedy.
Right.
And then he gets shot in the back with an arrow.
Yep.
And he yells out, I know that's you, Roy. And it turns out this is a time loop movie.
Yep, this is a Groundhog Day.
I did not see that coming.
No, I didn't either.
And it's great because it's him. He's been in this time loop. And you'll find out that he also accidentally trapped J.K. Simmons in this time loop.
Yep.
And Simmons is not happy about it. And then he tries to keep Kristen Milioti's character from coming in the cave where the time loop starts, but she follows him, and now they're in the time loop together.
Yes. And it's interesting because it is Groundhog Day, but they definitely go outside the lines of what Groundhog Day was.
Yeah.
And do some interesting things.
Well, just having someone else in with you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, two other people in the loop.
Yeah.
And... J.K. Simmons can do no wrong,
most
part.
He's so great.
he's not in this a lot, but no, he steals them, of course.
He's got some really notable, important moments.
I have a weird track record with Andy Samberg. I used to not like him at all.
He's gotten really good.
He's gotten really good. He can do kind of the stupid dumbass, what's his production, stuff Lonely on Saturday Night Live, Lonely Island.
Well, this is Lonely Island.
This is. And he sometimes kind of falls into that jackassery.
And he does that here, but also Brooklyn Nine-Nine has really given him a chance to show his heart.
I agree.
I think there's that is here, too. Like, the heart of this is the romance between Kristen Milioti, and I think it works.
And I think having his character being okay with where he is, he's been in it for so long that basically he's given up.
So and, I rewatched this, Nick, recently.
Yeah.
And it's fun to rewatch because at the first part of it, like, you don't know what's going on.
Right.
But, like, there's clues in there. Like, he's, you know, why is he wearing a Hawaiian shirt? Why is he acting like this? How does he, and I watched him, like, he catches the drunk guy and lays him down. Like, he's doing things, he's seen things happen.
Yep.
But there's a point where one of the grandmothers comes over and she's like, I've been to a lot of weddings. You probably haven't been to as many weddings as I have. And he's like, oh, you'd be surprised. What's funny then at the end though, Nick, is that she comes over to them.
She's
in the loop.
She's in the loop.
And I was like, I didn't catch that till the second time through either.
I caught that on the first watch, and I was like, she's in the loop.
Interesting. There's some really fun little bits like that. And Kristen Milioti can do no wrong for me. I loved her.
Where else is she from?
She was the mother on How I Met Your Mother.
She was in
that one season show A to Z.
Okay.
Which was great. And then she was in that Black Mirror episode. Where she was like object of like some of creepy Breaking Bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
The Star Trek riff.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah. She's great here. She's great as sort of a self-destructive person who's trying to be better.
Well, and they're kind of, once they sort of have their meet cute, they've kind of fashioned kind of a romance between, some of the stuff they do is hilarious. The bomb and the cake gag.
Yeah, the bomb and the cake
gag. I died laughing at their horrible accents. And it's just like, they get to have fun.
Yeah.
And, but it ultimately is about sort of relationships and, you know, getting out of your comfort zones and things like that. And I thought it was it's a touching story, kind of shaped around a stupid concept.
It's again, it's one of these that's better than any right to be.
Yes.
It's like, it's so good. And yeah, it's funny, it's sweet.
They're dinosaurs for some reason.
They're dinosaurs, yep. yeah, it's really good. And if you like time loop movies, this is a good time loop movie.
It is.
I want to mention a couple things that I've been watching. I went down a rabbit hole with Quibi, which is the dumbest thing I've ever seen launched.
How does so many good people are involved in this?
So this is a streaming network on your phone. It was done by Jeffrey Katzenberg and somebody else, I don't remember, these big media people who are like old.
Yeah.
And they don't understand television. And they also had the misfortune, they were like, everybody's always on their phone, we're going to watch content for your phone. Which probably wasn't a great idea in the first place. But it definitely wasn't a great idea when the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And everybody's at home with their 60-inch TV screens.
Yep.
Like, it's the dumbest thing. And for the first month or two of it, you could only watch it on your phone. Now they've got it where you can stream it to an Apple TV or a Chromecast. If you have a Roku, you're out of luck, but, you know.
Yeah.
And it should be an app. It should be an app you can watch your TV. But once I can watch it on my TV, the reason I got this is because they have a free 90-day trial. And I would recommend trying out the 90-day trial because there's so much good stuff on here. There is a series called Dolly that has Anna Kendrick and Donald Logue. And it's about Anna Kendrick discovering that her boyfriend, Donald Logue, who is playing Dan Harmon.
Yeah.
Has a sex doll, and she starts hallucinating that it's talking to her. And it's about the relationship between her and the sex doll. That's one series. There is a remake of The World's Most Dangerous Game, starring Liam Hemsworth and Christoph Waltz. There is a comedy series called Royalties that's about a pair of songwriters, from Heather Donahue from... You're the Worst and other things.
Isn't there a show
along called... with Darren Criss from Glee that's a series.
Isn't there a show called Die Hard?
The newest one is Die Hard, in which Kevin Hart is mad that he's been put together as the comedic sidekick. He wants to be an action star. So he winds up going to this action camp run by John Travolta's character, who seems to be a psychopath. And then the girl who plays Ramses from Fast and Furious is also there.
Sure.
And they're in like an action boot camp. And there's something weird going on. And it's like, he thinks that John Travolta's character is actually trying to kill him.
Okay.
Josh Hartnett shows up at some point. It's like, the talent behind this is spectacular. And the shows are good and the writing is good. It's just the dumbest presentation I've ever seen.
Because these are also in what, 5-minute increments?
Or 5 to 10, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That just sounds so bizarre.
But here's the thing. The thing that's worth getting it for, even if you only did the trial, they did something called Home Movies Princess Bride.
Yeah.
This was filmed in the time of COVID, so it's basically a bunch of celebrities using their phone cams and that kind of thing. They did essentially a shot-for-shot Princess Bride remake in 5 to 10 minute increment of periods. And what they do is they have, on one side they've got the video, on the other side they've got a still picture from the movie, and who originally played it, and who is playing the role now. And they have, this is star-studded, and it has got things like Thomas Lennon from Reno 911 wearing his Reno 911 costume, playing Prince Humperdinck.
Sure.
And they're doing, I mean, they cut out some stuff, but it is basically all the way through The Princess Bride. And they have all these different people come in, all these celebrities come in and play these parts. Everybody clearly loves it. They keep changing. There's one, Brandon Routh and his husband at one point did the Fire Swamp thing where one of them plays, that Brandon Rostad starts out as a blonde wig on.
Yeah.
And his husband has like the Wesley mask. And they're doing the Fire Swamp stuff. And then halfway through they switch. And now Brandon Routh is a man in black and his husband is playing Buttercup. there's a bit at the end where Paul Rudd is playing Wesley and Cary Elwes is playing Prince Humperdinck.
Sure.
It's so much fun. So, several people do a killer Andre the Giant impression. It is delightful and sweet. It ends on the last thing Carl Reiner ever filmed, where he is playing the part of was it Peter Falk?
And
the kid he's reading to is Rob Reiner.
Oh.
And that was just like, got me. It's so good. It is honestly. It made me immediately after finishing, I watched Princess Bride again.
Yeah.
But it's so much fun. And honestly, I want them to do this with their beloved classics.
That'd be fun.
I want them to make more home movies. But even if they don't, Home Movies Princess Bride is alone worth getting Queeby for. Even though it is the dumbest presentation I've ever seen in my life. the last thing I want to mention is I was watching a show that's on CBS All Access. This is one of their originals. It is called The Good Fight.
Right.
It is a spin-off of The Good Wife, which I've never seen.
And that was the Juliana Margulies... Mm-hmm.
Like a political legal drama?
Yeah. And I remember watching it, like, a few episodes when it originally aired, and I thought it was good. She was coming off of VR.
Yeah.
Well, in my brain, she was coming off of VR.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And Sopranos. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
But I never finished it, but I've heard it was really good.
This makes me want to go back and watch Good Wife.
Because isn't it the same people who do Evil...
It's Robert and Michelle King who do Evil, who did The Good Wife. They've done a couple other notable things.
And this, the one that you're finished watching, focuses around, is it Christine Baranski?
So yeah, Christine Baranski is one of the leads, or one of the main characters in Good Wife, right? Or is she a side
character? Oh, she might be a side character or something.
So she's a woman named Diane, and she is a lawyer working for this big firm. And this starts with Donald Trump being elected, and with her... A family friend, a younger family friend named Maya, who is just getting out of law school and is coming to work at her new firm. And then it turns out that her family friend Maya, Maya's dad, gets arrested for this Ponzi scheme. It's like bigger than Bernie Madoff and that kind of thing. And Maya is implicated. And Diane, as someone who helped introduce him to the firm, is implicated. And she loses her job. She loses all her money. She was just about to retire and go live in Italy. After Trump got elected, and instead she's stuck here. So she goes to join this predominantly African-American firm in Chicago, run by Delroy Lindo.
I was going to say, I thought Delroy Lindo was in there.
Yeah, Delroy Lindo is Adrian Boseman. He is like one of the main guys. It's a firm that spun out of the civil rights hero that sort of started it. And it's a big legal firm that is making its payments on police brutality cases.
Okay.
And they started getting into sort of political stuff and dealing with that kind of thing. And it is about Diane and Adrian, and Delroy Lindo and Christine Baranski and this girl Maya. And there's a new character introduced who's our private investigator. Hmm. And they also bring in...
at the cast.
There's a woman named Cush Jumbo.
Yes.
And that's an amazing name.
Luca Quinn?
No, Luca Quinn is her name. Jumbo is the actress.
Okay.
Both those names are great.
Yes,
and she plays an associate, and she's fantastic, and she's super good. But it's basically, it's a legal drama plus a political drama. It brings a lot of what you liked about, like, West Wing and that kind of stuff. And I found it utterly compelling. It's also got a little bit of that weirdness like David E. Kelly had in his, in some of his stuff, like Boston Legal and that kind of stuff. Okay.
I was going to say, the guest cast or cast as it goes down includes people that are
Her ex-husband is Gary Cole.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Gary Cole in there. There's a bunch of character actors like Michael Boatman, who has been in pretty much everything.
Michael Boatman, as he always does, plays the conservative black man.
Yes.
When they do their cases, the judge cases, they bring in big names like Rob Reiner is a judge on one of them.
I saw that Paul Guilfoyle is in. Guilfoyle is in there. Yep. Michael Sheen.
Yep.
Bernadette Peters, of all people. Matthew Perry shows up.
So Matthew Perry plays sort of an antagonist of them. I think he was in Good Wife as well.
Oh, interesting.
Michael Sheen plays basically I swear he's doing a riff on Al Pacino from Scent of a Woman, but as if that character was Roger Stone.
Oh, interesting.
It's very interesting. He is an absolute scum person who's totally fun to watch.
But also, you bring either of these people in, I'm interested already, but John Larroquette and Tim Matheson.
John Larroquette shows up later in the season. Tim Matheson is only in, like, one or two episodes. But yeah.
Okay, Fisher Stevens. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Fisher Stevens plays one of the worst lawyers in Chicago who keeps getting involved in cases.
Oh, Mike Coulter shows up. That's cool.
Yeah, it's...
This sounds like something I need to watch.
It's really good. I loved it. The thing that got me is Les was describing, my friend Les, who's on the TV Dudes podcast with me, was describing season four, which opens with a alternate world for, there's a reason for it. It's that Diane has fallen into where Hillary Clinton has won the presidency instead of Donald Trump.
Okay.
But now her law firm is representing Harvey Weinstein because Me Too never happened.
Oh.
And it is interesting. It's only one episode, but it is a fascinating, like, and that's the kind of thing the show does. Like, it looks at politics. There's a case about a transgender athlete who is trying to keep her spot on the Olympic team, the women's Olympic team, and they are the ones arguing against that because there's an African-American woman who's been kicked off the team because this transgender athlete is on, and they're trying to argue that because of her testosterone levels, she technically does. And so they're basically arguing the anti-trans side, even though they're liberal, and it's fascinating to watch. There's a whole, the season four is this whole, like, memo 618 or 816 or something like that. That's this weird conspiracy thing. They get into, they have a Milo Yiannopoulos type character, played very memorably by the guy who plays sort of the Dan Savage guy in Shrill.
Okay.
There's a lot of sort of fun recurring characters. It's really
so
good.
So you're saying there's another reason to have CBS All Access.
Mm-hmm, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Before this, it was, if you were a Star Trek fan, you had to have CBS All Access. Mm-hmm. Glad to know that there's another show on there that's worth it.
Well, yeah, and this is their original.
Yeah.
But also, like, they have Evil, which we all really liked, and they've got the Unicorn, which we like, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few things. But yeah, it's really good. I highly recommend it. I think that's all we had this time out. Yeah, so that's just our thoughts and some stuff. Next week, we should be back with Comics Talk. And until next time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.